myself out.
I am afraid of...
I'm terrified and paralyzed by...
I am deathly afraid of...
Welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast with your host, me, Ryan Perio. Hello, and welcome to the Sum of All Fears podcast. I am your host, Ryan Perio. This week, my guest is my friend Mike Danielson, who I met recently at the Plano House of Comedy. Mike has an amazing past where he is a rapper, a real estate agent, a manager of a comedian here in Dallas, an actor, and a father. He's got all these hats, and he just wears them all over the place, and it's just an amazing... He's lived an amazing life, and he's come from the same area that I grew up in, which is the A-Leaf area in Houston, Texas. So we talk a lot about our memories of A-Leaf, Texas, growing up in Houston, how he got into real estate, acting, rapping, and managing a local comedian. And then we get into his fear of risking it all, which he's doing by leaving A-Leaf, his home where all his friends and family reside, and having a fresh start here in Dallas as a real estate agent. So let's get into that interview right now with Mike Danielson. My guest this week is rapper, realtor, and manager Mike Danielson. Mike, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Ryan. How are you doing?
I am staying indoors because I went outside yesterday, and that is enough for me. I've never felt so dried out just going outside. Like, the concrete just feels like it's taking every bit of moisture out of your body.
It's not like Houston, huh?
Oh, well, it can be both. It's hot, but I think it's more miserable in Houston because of just the humidity and the sweat that just comes along with the summer in Houston. Like, it's like you're never comfortable in Houston. Like, you're wearing, it's like immediately just soaked.
Yeah. And what a lot of your listeners don't know is that we actually have a connection. We are both great stars of the A-Leaf Youth Association sports complex.
It's basically the creme de la creme of Houston athletics.
Exactly.
I believe Joseph Addai actually was there because he was from Sharpstown area.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, he grew up in Sharpstown. World. So I was like, oh, yeah. Then he probably did AYA as well. I'm glad.
I think we all did. We didn't have much else to do.
Yeah. So when did you move here from Houston?
I moved out here about 22 years ago.
Okay. About 10 more years. I came out in 91. So I moved out of Houston in the early 90s. I was in junior high, just going into high school. And so I moved out here to help my uncle out, who we had lost our patriarch of our family. And so we all kind of consolidated family life into one house in HEB area.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I moved down here. I was actually doing real estate in Houston. I worked for a real estate office as their assistant, and I kind of pulled all the forms, did all that kind of stuff, and I started going to school for it out there. And then my girlfriend at the time got pregnant, which I don't know if you have any kids, but that kind of throws a monkey wrench into plans sometimes. And my brother was starting a printing company out here. So he told me, like, hey, do you want to come in on this printing company? I had money at the time. And I was like, yeah, because real estate was not, like a guaranteed check. You know, it's all commission based. So I was like, do I really want to start a family and not know? And kind of as to what you were saying, this episode's about fear of risk, right? So I risk it all then. And I was like, let me try and see what I can do.
Yeah. And you're risking it all right now with the smoke detector in the back.
I am. I took the battery out, dude. We could have a fire and I wouldn't even know. But I mean, that chirp's going to keep going for me. Yeah.
So you came out here for a fresh start with, I guess, more family than you had when you were in Houston area.
Yeah.
Do you miss anything about Houston?
No, nothing at all.
Okay. I sometimes do. Like, I miss some of the restaurants. Like, I used to go to Los Tios as one of my favorite things to do when I go back to Houston, is I will hit Los Tios once every time I go back.
There's a lot of good restaurants. We were in Rosenberg for a while too, and there's a ton of good Mexican restaurants out there. All my wife's family lives out there, which a lot of my friends are her family. So I miss them. But I mean, other than Houston as a city, I mean, I think Dallas has a lot more to offer.
Yeah.
I mean, entertainment wise.
Yeah. Rosenberg, like I went to Rosenberg a few times for barbecue. I remember going out there for barbecue. Like it was like barbecue joint. Like they had, you'd even sit on chairs. We sat on bales of hay. Like they had square bales. It's like, and that was one of the barbecue places my grandfather loved. And so we would always go out there like once Sunday, like a month, we would just get in the car and get on Harwin, take a left and start kind of making our way back to Rosenberg.
Yeah.
Because it was just such a weird area at that time. Like, because I literally lived in right where everything ended for a while. So we were at the end of the earth at Bel Air and Highway 6. Yeah. We lived off in that area, and it just kind of dead end, and you had like Harwin and stuff, and there would be like a feeder road, and you would like jump across the railroad tracks on Harwin, and then it was just like a country road back in the backs to like Hempstead.
Yeah, US 90 took you all the way down. I think from Highway 6, you could take 90 all the way to Rosenberg. That was pretty much the only road in or out back then. Yeah. I mean, then they expanded 59, and it looks totally different now. I mean, it's totally different place.
Yeah, we went there a few years ago. So my grandmother passed, and so we went down there to visit family friends that lived with us that were my grandmother's neighbor and stuff, and just family friend. And we went to visit her, and we went, and they have some sort of tollway now that goes in between 59 and 10. It's like
I think it's called 69 is what it's called.
Yeah.
Which oddly enough was my number on AYA football.
Yeah. And so we drove that, and like, we were like driving back, and we're like, we didn't even know where, like, cause it used to be for when you got to Fry Street on Highway 10.
Yeah.
It was nothing. Like, you just could go, and it would be forever until you got to like the kind of the well-to-do neighborhoods out in Katy.
Yeah.
And now it's like you can't tell where that all was. Like, it's all just completely developed and everything else. I think
they call it Grand Parkway now. Yeah. That one you're talking about, my sister-in-law lives in Katy. So I mean, it's a straight shot from Rosenberg to there now. I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, like it used to be just so like empty, and it's like it's just mind blowing that is all filled in, like, and established for probably decades, and you just wouldn't even believe it.
So were you out here when you were out here in the 90s? So you saw Frisco when Frisco was like, bunch of farmlands. My brothers grew up there, and it's crazy to see the growth on that now. I mean, it's nuts, dude. Yeah,
because I was in my somewhat college, I like had to go through Frisco. Like, I took 121 because I know where 121 was, so I just took 121 all the way up through McKinney, Louisville, and all that. And it just, once you got on the other side of 75, it was just nothing.
Yeah,
it was just completely vacated. Now it's Nebraska Furniture Mart. And it's just mind blowing. It's like it makes you feel old, because it's like how long has it been this way? And you just like, it makes you realize like how long it's been since you've been in that area even. So like, if you go visit your hometown in Houston, it's like, how long has it been since I've seen this place?
Oh yeah. I haven't been there in a while. I try to avoid it.
Well,
I do go back to Rosenberg and Needville quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I have family down there, so I will go to visit my dad, who now lives off of 290. He lived right off of TC Jester and 610. So it was a really straight shot from 45 to 610.
Yeah.
But now he lives a little further out off 290 because he travels a lot, and he wanted to live in a neighborhood that had like one way in and one way out for kind of security reasons, you know, to say, hey,
yeah, definitely.
If you leave your house unattended for an extended period of time, you don't want it to be
gone.
Yeah. Or just, you know, just feel, you want to feel safe that, you know, there's only one way in, one way out. You know, the neighbors and stuff, they're like head of the HOA now and do all that stuff. So,
mayor of the city.
Yeah. They are amazing. Like, they just are amazing people. They have parties and stuff. They do wine tastings. They're party people.
Okay.
And so they also do a lot of traveling. And so they were always afraid of just living in the middle of a neighborhood. You know, somebody could break in at any point in time. And if you're in Italy, who's going to tell you?
Yeah, exactly.
And then what are you going to do? Like, it's 3 days into your 10-day trip. By the way, your house is completely, ransacked.
Gone. Yeah.
So you When did you start rapping?
I started rapping when I was a little kid. I mean, okay. I always loved rap. I grew up in Houston, so I loved the Ghetto Boys. But before that, I loved Fat Boys and LL Cool J. And I was really Beastie Boys. I mean, I was into all that. And as soon as I got a tape deck that had two, you know, like the tape you could play and then the tape you could record, I was recording raps about Bugs Bunny and stuff when I was like 8, 9 years old, you know.
Yeah.
They weren't great. Hopefully they don't exist anywhere because I wouldn't want to hear them. I barely want to hear some of the stuff I did in Houston before I moved out here because it's all so horrible. But yeah, I did that for forever. But I like professionally started doing it probably right about 98, 99.
Okay.
Where I was actually in studios and stuff. And I did a lot of stuff with people in Houston. And then as soon as I moved out here, it just blew up. I thought surely I'm going to move to Dallas and never rap again because all the connections I had in Houston, I don't have them here. Nobody here knows me. And at my printing company, I owned a printing company before. There was like 4 rap studios right behind me, and I was outside smoking. And these guys were smoking, trying to sell me a CD, and I'm like, "Dude, I rap. I mean, where do y'all rap at?" And I got down with them, and I mean, that's where it took off like real big. I got with Slump Masters, which they had a couple songs in movies. If you ever watched You've Been Served,
yes,
that breakdance, the final dance song on that movie was somebody from my group. It was Slump Masters. So we had that, and then I had DDC. And we got Best Band in Dallas, like for the DFW Quick newspaper, and we were in Ozone magazine every month. So, but now I'm too old. I don't do it now.
Okay.
Now I do acting. That's one of the things you didn't mention. I do. I also do acting. I have 2 movies on Amazon Prime right now.
Whoa.
So, yeah, one's called Prepper. It's by Film Patterson, and then the other one is It's a Wonderful Plight by Vintage Rhodes, which that guy's actually a connection of mine through the music industry. He produces for The Game and Lecrae and all that. And he just got into movies and. You know, so I had the connection through the music for that.
You just are a master of connections. Like, you have connections. You are the guy that gets things for everybody. You're the Morgan Freeman and Shawshank Redition. I'm the man that...
Yeah. Yeah, that's me. You need a shank? Let me know. I got you, Ryan.
Okay. I just need a picture of Raquel Welch, a poster of Raquel Welch on my...
It's on my ceiling.
Gina Davis.
Hiding a hole.
But yeah, so... So who like when you got into rap? So was the Fat Boys and like just Crush Groove, like that whole era, just kind of
Run DMC, Tougher Than Leather. I mean, I met the Beastie Boys when I was probably 11-ish years old. I was at an airport. Nobody knew who they were. I was taking my grandmother back to Michigan, and I saw these 3 white dudes, and all of their luggage was Adidas, and I was like. These are 3 white dudes with the Adidas luggage. I was like, surely that's the Beastie Boys. And my mom drugged me away. She's like, get away. You know, like, don't talk to strange men. You know what I mean? And they ended up being at the gate next to my grandmother. And so I walked up and I was like, dude, I went to Mike D. I was like, dude, my name's Mike D. I was like, I also get respect.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I got his autograph. It was cool, man. But yeah, that's where I started the path.
I would have loved to have had Adidas luggage. That was the cool. Yeah, that to me would have been the coolest.
It was dope, man. It wasn't like a standard suit. It was like duffel bags, but they had a shit ton of them. I don't know if we can cuss on here. Poop ton. Yeah.
You can
beat me up.
Yeah. I don't mind. I it's explicit because, I mean, we talk about adult things. And so it's one of those things where I don't think kids are going to listen to it anyway. So,
yeah. Who wants to listen to 2 old guys from A-Leaf talk about the Beastie Boys?
In A-Leaf. It's so crazy to me because I just remember the fields like on Harwin Road and going there, then going to like Mr. Gaddy's or
pizza. You remember Pistol Pete's Pizza?
I don't remember Pistol Pete's. I do remember Mr. Gaddy's, which was
Gaddy's was big over there.
Oh, I loved Mr. Gaddy's. Like, they have one here. It's in Plano.
Yeah.
And I'll order a sampler every once in a while just to.
I think they still have one in Richardson also.
Okay.
But they had a Gaddy Town in Frisco for a while. I used to take my kids there. That was fun.
Yeah. I was like, I just love the sampler. I was like, that's something from my childhood. It was one of the best pizzas. It's still darn good pizza, to be honest. It's like when you eat it, you're like, wow, this is pretty damn good pizza. Like, I remember.
Yeah. And so, I even like Little Caesar, dude. Those are like $5 a piece.
Yeah.
And they're actually better than most of the stuff you get from Domino's, which is crazy, you know.
It's so amazing to me, like with the fear of risk, how many risks you've taken in life. Like. Because, I mean, if anybody were to look at you, they would not. I never would have saw rapper. Like, I would have seen rap fan. Yeah. I definitely see rap influence in your style and your dress.
Yeah.
But I would never assume that you were actually, like, rapper in, you just have such a calm demeanor. Like, it's not something, you know, usually they're, you know, it's a bigger in life personality that they command a room. And
I kind of do command a room sometimes when I'm in it, though.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where it works with me on managing Alex. Like, I mm-hmm. manage Alexander Kay. He's a local comedian. I work the room for him. Like, I mean, he's more about on stage. He's a beast, but he didn't really have anybody like talking to the door people or bookers and all that. So I'll talk to anybody, dude. I've never met a stranger in my life. I mean, I can start up a conversation. That's why real estate is like an amazing thing for me right now. I mean, I know so many people in my circle, but anybody I meet, they're just like a friend I've had for 20 years. It doesn't matter.
You know? And that's a great skill to have as a realtor, is to be able to develop that kind of interpersonal connection.
Yeah.
On meat is a super skill, and especially again from your background of approaching Mike D of the Beastie Boys, or you know this film producer, or your kids, even just to command, you know, to show your kids, mm-hmm. hey, there's a way to do this without being off-putting, or you know, just complete, you know, you can have a total room in your command.
Yeah.
And maybe not even say a word, like just entering sometimes, just having that kind of confidence.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking about my kids, like the music that apparently they tell their friends in school, because all my music's still on iTunes and all that. Mm-hmm. And I'll go to, like, I went to my daughter's, we took pictures before the prom the other day, and her date was like, "Man, I'm a fan of your stuff." And I'm like, "Fan of my stuff?" He's like, "Yeah, Payday. I downloaded your thing off iTunes." I'm like, "Oh, okay, cool." I was like, "Whatever."
Got some royalties coming now. Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. I get checks still. I mean, they pay so little for streaming music nowadays. Mm-hmm. So I'm on Spotify, iTunes, Google. I mean, I'm on all those, but I'll get like a $20 check like every month or two or something like that. And that's for like 20,000 streams. It's like 0.002 cents or something like that per stream, depending on the service. So.
Yeah, but it's still cool to just be able to kind of have that history. That, like, I recorded a comedy album when I'm working on getting that release from my friends and stuff. But it's a compendium of my work. I wanted something that when I walked away from comedy, that's tangible.
It'll live on past your career.
Yes,
you know, that's what it's all about. It's the art. You know, you're creating the art. You want everybody to hear the art. I don't care if I get $20 or $0. Yeah. I just want people to hear it. I made it. You know, it's blood, sweat, and tears, just like your comedy. Yeah, you know,
it's stage time.
It'll live on forever.
Yeah, you know? Stage, studio time. It's all creativity, and it's something that in your mind you know you're good at.
Yeah.
And you want to kind of show what you were good at. You know, maybe it wasn't the best football player, or basketball player, AYA baseball player, but damn if I'm not good on stage.
I actually was the best AYA football player, though. We won the Super Bowl. They still, to this day, my coach from that game, that was 1986. He is still on my Facebook, and he still talks about that was the best team that he ever had in his entire career of coaching. I don't know if he coached you, but you know, I'm not saying anything, knocking you. But he's like in his 20 years of coaching, that was the best team. We never lost a game. We won the Super Bowl. I had a little satin jacket that said AYA Super Bowl champs and had Mikey stitched on the side. It was pretty cool.
I wish you could find that somewhere, like just the...
I wish I could, too. Yeah. It'd be really small now.
Like, I remember the AYA jerseys, like, when I played baseball, and that was... One of the roughest things was playing summer league baseball in AYA, because we had real jerseys. Like, it wasn't...
Yeah.
Wasn't like
these jerseys.
Yeah,
they were stitched letters and everything, dude.
They were... It wasn't even stitched letters, painted numbers, and it was like you could feel... You could feel, like, it burning into your back when you played. Yeah.
They were painted.
Yeah, it was one of the worst feelings of the world, just sitting on the bench and just having the sun cook your number into your bag.
Exactly.
and you're just having to sit there and take it, and then you would have Shasta or, you know, whatever sodas parents brought, and then you would have pizza to, like, I still have some of the gold stars from my hats, like the little Klimt. Remember when you were in baseball, we had those gold stars.
I had all the little stars on my Mariners hat. I mean, I think there's a picture of me on there wearing the Mariners jersey with the hat, and I had the little stars on them.
Yeah, I've got some of mine. Like, I was on the Angels, the Royals, and I think that was, then I was on the Astros in junior high, but it was...
Oh, man, you're on the Astros, home team. All right.
Dude, that's still my team. Like, I still have pictures of me going to the Astrodome and stuff, and
yeah.
Like, I had my old Astros jersey on when I was, like, six.
Did you ever get to go to Minute Maid Park when it opened?
I did not go to Minute Maid Park because it already started. I've been around it. Like I went there a few months ago for a comedy show, and I walked around downtown.
I went to the inaugural game, the very first game they ever had with the Astros, and I forget who they were playing, but it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks like a cool stadium. Like I've been to the Rangers Stadium, which I love baseball, so it's one of my. And so I'll go to the Rangers ballpark, and I'm like, it's okay. Like I enjoy the indoorness of it and stuff, and that being 67 degrees. But I was like, that was always baseball for me, because when you grew up in the Astrodome, it was always 70 degrees. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like it kind of brings me back. Like I also lived in St. Louis for a little while, so I went to the old Busch Stadium in the 80s, which was really cool. To go to a night game there was super awesome. Just outdoors in the dark.
Yeah.
So is Mike D like the highlight in also recording your own album? But was meeting Mike D like the biggest rapper you met, or did you meet?
Oh no, I started a Christian rap magazine back in 2007. And Bushwick Bill was like my favorite rapper of all time. The midget from Ghetto Boys.
Yeah.
And he lived in A-Leaf. He lived in A-Leaf, and Scarface also lived in A-Leaf. Scarface lived across the street from me. But I met Bushwick a couple of times when I was a kid. I met Scarface when I was a kid. He lived in Family Tree Apartments on Boone Road. So I brought that up to him recently, and he was like, oh, yeah, you do know me then. I was like, yeah, I was a little kid. He closed the door in my face.
you did know me. Click.
I've met a lot of, like, people, you know, rap-wise, just from being in the industry, like Bushwick Bill. I've met I did a show with Little O from Screwed Up Click. There's a lot of people. Charlie Murphy was probably the highlight of, like, famous people I've met. Mm-hmm. I met Charlie Murphy at Addison Improv, like, a long time ago. That was a highlight. I love comedy, too. I mean, so. Yeah. I met him, Pauly Shore. Who else? I wanted to meet Andrew Dice Clay. When I was a kid, Andrew Dice Clay was my favorite comedian of all time. I could tell you every single one of those nursery rhymes he used to do. Are you familiar with Andrew Dice Clay?
Oh yeah, like we did all that when I was in like fifth and sixth grade, because that was in the late
80s. Yeah, I never grew out of it though. I loved him forever.
Yeah, he came through. He comes through every once in a while.
He did. I caught his show at Hyenas in Plano when they still had that club.
Okay,
and it was pretty good. Also where I saw Pauly Shore.
So how did you come across Alexander Kay? So since you were talking about managing.
Okay, so when I was telling you about before, when I got into the rap groups here in Dallas, mm-hmm. I was in Slump Masters. Alexander Kay was in Slump Masters with me. He's a rapper. And he was actually our producer. He produces like really good beats and stuff like that. And then we broke off and started another group called DDC, which was Dirty Dialect Click. And it was me, him, our friend Classic, and Truck, and Dog Wonder. And so I've known him 20 years now. I mean, we did music together for a long time. But then when we got out of it, you know, I started getting into acting. He started getting into videography. He does like, he edits and shoots videos, music videos for people. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to start getting into sketch comedy. And so he knew I was into acting. So me and him started a sketch comedy show called Payday Plays. And I'm Payday. So it was me playing different characters. I played everybody in it. Sometimes we'd get other people. And then I don't know how he got a wild hair up his butt, but he just decided, I want to do a stand-up comedy. And he just did it one day. He went to Hat Tricks and did an open mic and killed. Mm-hmm. You know, there was like, it was probably three people in the crowd. I was two of the people, me and my wife. But I mean, he killed on stage.
The other guy in the background was just destroyed.
The other guy was Money Mike. I don't know if you know Money Mike. He was in the crowd. He was on that open mic also.
I think I've heard of him. I don't.
He's pretty funny, but so he did it that first time, and I was just like, dude, it's he carried his rap stage presence mm-hmm. into comedy, you know, which that's the key when you're up there, is the confidence and the, you know, stage presence.
I would say that's some of it, but there's also you got to he'll as he gets even more developed, he'll have even more vulnerability,
and yeah.
That's what it is to be able to be confident, but also open enough that people can resonate with you. And
exactly.
And it's like a pool, like when you're doing your pool cleaning, you know, and you're trying to get the chlorine level right.
Yeah.
That's where that's the next step, is just to kind of get the attitude versus honesty kind of level to where it fits who you are and the people, and it grabs people. It's like it's what the audience lets you get away with, cuz you can try to be so honest that either people just start feeling sorry for you up there, because you'll see those comics that just keep beating themselves up to the point that, and it's, they don't understand that it's, we get it, you don't like yourself, but we like you. And it's, yeah. I used to be that guy. I used to be the comic that would just keep beating myself up and just like, because that's all people did to me. People would always beat me up emotionally, physically. And I just assumed that's status quo.
Yeah.
And what happens is you realize that it's like people watching a boxing match with somebody that's never fought before versus like Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
The first few punches, like, ooh, and then it's like, it starts to get uncomfortable because you're still getting, just pasted left and right. And it's like people, it's like, ooh, that's where people, you just have to learn a balance. It's like, yeah. And people will pull me aside. It's like, you may not like yourself, but we like you. And nobody wants to see you just basically just beat the snot out of
yourself. Or,
yeah. And so.
But. You killed at that show at House of Comedy that I actually met you at.
Thank you.
You killed on that one. But yeah. But you had all that. I
mean, yeah. It just takes time. And it's one of those things like, he's good now, but I just imagine like once he finds that perfect level of attitude and honesty that just basically just sets him over the edge. It's like, because it's just a struggle. You learn, as long as he keeps going and learning every time he goes up, he'll only get better and better. And sometimes it'll feel like you're just struggling with nobody watching you. And so I imagine, like I said, you to have somebody in your corner, even in that stages that's known you for 20 years that can, which you, I feel like if you saw something that you were like, hey man, that doesn't fit, or, you could
set him straight. I tell him on a daily basis, as soon as he gets off stage, I'm like, dude, we have like hour long conversations about, change up this, maybe don't, act that way or do this or say something this way. And I've given him a couple, just like different jokes, like working them different ways and stuff. But yeah. I mean, I'm funny. I have a lot of respect for y'all. Like, T.I. recently got on stage and tried that, right? Didn't quite work out.
I heard.
And I think it goes exactly into what you were saying about not having, having a little bit of vulnerability when you're on stage.
Yeah.
He did not. He got on, I'm T.I., haha, you're going to laugh at me, That's how I would probably be on the stage because my personality is that way, and nobody's going to laugh if I get up there. I'm funny, but I'm going to, like, force my funny on people, and it's not, it's not going to work. But
yeah, but I mean, it's also just takes time to, that's what you, if you were to pursue it, it would just like rapping, you got to find the right, words and the right bars and everything else, and it's...
Yeah.
There's a lot to it, but I mean, to have that experience already of stage time and stuff for Alexander, that's one hurdle he doesn't have to, stage fright is one hurdle he's already got.
Yeah.
He's gotten past. And so he's in a side of his peers, he's already mastered that one. The next one then is to just to fine tune that stuff and just talk about real things not just observations. To me, people always talk about like, I think this is funny. I was like, that's, to me, funny is a feeling. Like when you laugh, you felt that, and it's like when I have a good joke, I feel it. I'm like, I felt that. I feel as like, I don't even have to do it open mic. Sometimes I'll think it. And I was like, I know I feel that's going to be good.
Yeah.
So when people say
a lot of his stuff is real life stuff. Like he brings up his dad a lot. His dad was from Ghana. So he's always like, he does voices like crazy good. Like he does a perfect rendition of his dad. He goes, sit down at the table. He does like this old African dad voice. Yeah. And it's just, those jokes are the ones that kill when he does those. I mean, because people really, he's got a joke about second grade Renee, where he's talking about this girl in second grade. She had second grade booty and he was all in love with her in the tire swing. And at the end, she was with another guy in the tire swing. And like everybody in the crowd's always like, oh, and they resonate with him because he brings in real stuff, So
yeah.
I totally see that in the comedy.
And when's the last time you've seen a tire swing? I want to know.
You know what? I'm from Rosenberg, so probably like a month ago when I was down there. They still have them there.
Yeah. I was like, I remember the parks in Mission Bend area. Like I remember there was like one tire swing in the middle, like a cast iron steering wheel. Like a little place you could jump on, a metal, big, tall metal slide.
Yeah. Oh, and the ones that get really hot in the summertime that burn the skin off your legs.
Yeah. And then the swimming pool that I grew up in, which now has water slides and stuff behind the stop and go off of Camino del Sol and Bel Air.
Are there any of you stop and goes around anymore? I don't think I've seen them out here. Are they out here?
If there was only one that I saw, which was in Carrollton off Rosemead and right now would be George Bush. So it was like Rosemead.
Do you remember Circle K?
Ice
yeah. I've seen one of those here.
They're coming up here now. Like, there's more of them now. So there's one by my house over here in Irving. And there's been way more recently. Like, there was a Circle K and Stop and Go. Two Stop and Go's and a Circle K. And so Stop and Go was at Camino del Sol in Bel Air on my side of the street. Then they had one not at Navidad. That was the Circle K. And then the other one was, I think, no, it was Navidad. Winkleman was the Circle K, and then Navidad. Another light down, they had another Stop and Go with a Metro bus stop when my mom would take to go to work. So I would get up.
Yeah.
And I just...
I live right across the street from the Metro bus station on Boone Road.
Yeah.
We took bolt cutters and we cut their chain link fence so we can cut through and go to school quicker. So we made ourselves a little doorway because it's A-leaf. Nobody cares, yeah. You know, you can cut things down.
Yeah, it's just one of those things we learned, you know, like they used to have abandoned houses and stuff, and you could just open the door because they would just have.
Oh, yeah. Dude, those were our clubhouses in Leawood where I lived at. There's like four or five houses. Nobody ever lived in them. And those were our clubhouses. I mean, we went in, set up camp in them. But yeah, it would like be our after school hangout spot, go smoke weed and, you know, do whatever.
So as a real estate person, and you said you risked it all, like you're pursuing this real estate just from scratch. So you just started doing what got you into real estate?
Well, the fact that I did it 20 years ago, I actually started out doing I basically did what a real estate agent did. I pulled all of her forms. Back then, everything was by hand because that was in the late 90s. So there was no computers. Now. I have DocuSign. I can send, if somebody wants a contract, I can send every single contract in an envelope on a computer and here, sign those, click here, click there. Well, I would pull all those things. And she was actually, she saw my personality and she thought I would kill it real estate. So she started putting me through real estate school. Mm-hmm. But then my girlfriend got pregnant and I moved here. And then I just kind of put it on the back burner. But for 21 years, I've done printing and it wasn't really as fulfilling a job as, I expected it to be. Just, it wasn't something I loved. I didn't have a passion for it, you know? Mm-hmm. But real estate, I still had a passion for it. Like I still, to this day, before I even got into real estate, I would go to model homes and just look at them because I like looking at the different design styles. And every time there's a house being built in my neighborhood, I go walk them, they're, when they're in the framing stage, when they're in the next stage. I like to see 2x4s turn into a home, what I mean? Somewhere that people are going to build memories and stuff like that. So when I had the opportunity to get out of the printing company, the first thing I went to was like real estate. That's what I want. So I just, buckled down, knocked everything out quickly as possible. And, now I'm here.
it's something again, I feel like that's even, that's the way you approach a fear of taking a risk is that I love doing it. And that way it takes a lot of the fear out of taking that risk because you enjoy doing it so much because imagine if you didn't enjoy it and you had to do it. Like that's what you had to do.
Mm-hmm.
That would be.
Well, that's what I did when I moved here. I put everything on hold and did a career I didn't really enjoy on a daily basis, but I invested all my money into it and I was tied to it. I couldn't, there was nowhere else to go. And it was just like every day I hated waking up. I was just like, every time the alarm went off, I got to go back there. It was a daily beating, dude. But now I'm excited to get up every single morning and just, I'm at a great company. I'm with Keller Williams McKinney. Everybody there is really helpful. They, anytime I have questions, there's older agents there that it's like I have the experience of 150 years because I have all those people at my fingertips. I'm like, hey, dude, what do I do in this situation? And there's no competition. Everybody's there to help, which is cool.
I feel like when you even talk to other realtors that are on the other end of the transaction you're doing, whether it's buying or selling, you're all in the same boat. You're not like, it's not this, like the, whatever that Bravo TV series was the $1 Million Listing or whatever, where those real estate agents for like the super and they're like,
a lot of that stage.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, I don't think it's that high drama. I was like,
no,
I think most real estate people are like, here's the game. All right. This isn't like TV. You can't come in here with a magic lowball offer that's going to get approved. There's not.
Not in this market. You can't. This market right now, dude, is stupid. I mean, it's crazy right now.
That's why I'm staying in my apartment for
Hey, but I'm telling you right now, it's in a shift right now. I mean, I'm not trying to sell you a house. I mean,
unless you want one.
but it's shifted to a buyer's market over the last 2 weeks. It's crazy. I go to open houses every weekend. the numbers have dropped down like drastically. I mean, people are not doing multiple offers and 100,000 over ask. Yeah. I mean, they're not doing that anymore. So yeah, it's mainly due to the interest rates going up and just a bunch of different factors.
Yeah, people are not trying to invest in homes. They're trying to. Now yeah, there's now they're exactly. seeing the interest rate and they're realizing it's not an investment anymore. It's a they have to actually stay in that house because I don't think they can flip it. When yeah. there was zero to no interest, then people are like, we can sell.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And it's like, now you're like, oh, we may be stuck with this for a while.
Yeah.
And that changes your perspective because a lot of these HGTV shows and stuff that teach, oh, yeah, you can just, you know, you just go in there and do some finishing touches and you can sell it for, you as like, you got have so much startup capital for that because you have to, the amount of money you have to get approved to buy that house.
Yeah.
You have is like you can't just be you got three houses that you're trying to flip, hard pass. We're not going to give you another loan that if you already got three.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times though, the way that they structure the loans on investment properties is totally different. I have a buddy, he has probably 30 properties. And I mean, he's always looking for new ones. I mean, so they keep letting him get them, but
yeah. But they make it seem so easy on TV and I'm sure it's easy once you're in the swing of it and you know what you're doing and you're aware of it. Yeah. It's like, if you're just trying to start.
Yeah, no way. The first one that, when you have them, they kind of pay for themselves, because you've got the mortgage on the one, you've got somebody in it. The rent is paying your mortgage. That's why I always talk about people. I'm like, please don't rent. I was like, cause all you're doing is paying somebody else's mortgage. You know what I mean? You're paying their mortgage. You're paying their HOA fees. You're paying their insurance, whatever amount. Cause I had a rental property in Princeton and whatever I'm charging you is a lot more than I'm paying. Cause I want money in my pocket too, but
it's worth me to keep the house and the upkeep and taxes and everything else.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that's, I mean, you're just such an amazing, communicator. Like, you're effective, you're honest, you're real, you don't mince words, you're definitely a Houston resident, because it's not a mince words. Like, look, dude.
They can't hear that, but I'll throw up the West for Ailey.
Absolutely. Like, West Oaks Mall.
Yeah.
Supposedly that area's like gone way downhill, and so I have not ventured back out to my old house to see what it looks like in that neighborhood.
Over by there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Mission Bend, it went down. That's what I've heard.
It was like a lot of gang music and stuff when I was moving out. Like, there was a lot of...
Well, that's where DJ Screw, his house was. He lived in Mission Bend. Before DJ Screw had the shop on Cullen, which was over... You know who DJ Screw is, right? Before
yes.
I start. Okay. So he had a house in Mission Bend before he had the store on Cullen, which is over in Third Ward, I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. Third Ward. So everybody would go to his house in Mission Bend. And like there's a movie out now that's kind of like a biopic on his story. And it shows when he had the house in Mission Bend. I used to go there every week and I go get tapes because that's the only place you could get them, mm-hmm. And the cops thought he was dealing drugs because there would be a line of cars every single, I forget what day it was, like Friday or Tuesday. He released tapes on a certain day. And there would be lines of people down the street, and they're all thinking he's selling drugs. So they busted in his house like 9 million times. So then he opened the shop because he's like, I'm tired of people breaking down my door.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mission Bend was like that back then.
Yeah, had Fame City, all that stuff. And
oh, dude, Fame City, that's my spot, dude. Waterworks.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was there like every summer, dude, the whole summer.
Same.
Did you ever see the spider web thing?
Yeah.
I've heard it. People died in it.
I've fallen through like multiple floors because it's tiny and
that thing was such a death trap, dude. I mean, it's literally rubber, like bungee. I guess bungees, like you tie stuff down in your truck and just a whole bunch intertwined. And dude, it was crazy. Yeah. But yeah, and it would get so hot in the summer too.
I mean, you had kids galore. Like, you're falling on other people in certain situations.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I remember that thing. I hated it. I did it one time, and I was like, never again.
Oh, I did it all the time, dude. But I don't know if it was true or if it was just an A-leaf, fake story. But they were like, oh, these kids died. And then they kept it open. I was like, they would not have kept it open if kids died in it.
They kept it open. But I think there was an accidental death of somebody that just tried to dove through it and just didn't catch any of the rubber. And so it was like a free fall because they just didn't do the right things.
My dog's freaking out.
That's okay.
So it's either a fire alarm or my dog.
Well,
I need to go to a recording studio and do this.
Well, yeah, that's the next step. So yeah. Have you had do any of your people like listen? Do you play like your rap music while you're on real estate, like touring homes? Like, hey, did you know I was in Payday?
It actually is a selling point. I mean, I had an agent. Hold on, let me go back to the beeping because the dog's louder than the beeping. I had an agent that gave me an open house. So like a lot of these agents are just offering me open houses because mm-hmm. they see my personality and know I do well at them and stuff. And I 2 days after I did the open house, he sends me a picture and it's me with the Oilers jersey with a gold grill on. It was like my album cover. He's like, dude, he said, please tell me this is you. And also please tell me you still have that hat and jersey. And I said, I'll do you one better. And I used to have hand painted shirts with my face on it. Like yeah. That was like the style back then. And I had a hand painted shirt done of me wearing the Astros hat. I mean, the Oilers hat and the jersey. And I was like, yeah, that's me. I said, you kind of regret giving me that open house now, right? And he's like, no, dude. He said, I feel all the more proud. I've got, you know, Payday, you know, giving open houses.
Is that your real estate name too? Like Mike Payday Daniels?
I'm not lying, dude. Like when I started Beam, it's going to be the Payday team 100%. Yeah. I don't know how professional that sounds, but it's been my name my whole entire life.
I think that's a great name for a real estate group, you know, yeah. Like Payday Properties, you know, Payday.
Oh, dude. I did not think Payday Properties. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, go for it. I was like, it's just, that's such a great fucking selling point. Like that's what you want. As like, you know, everybody gets the Payday, you know, everybody gets a Payday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Buyers, sellers. We want to facilitate you. We don't want to like not make this go through. That's what I think every real estate agent honestly wants is, we're here to facilitate you. We're not here to stand in the way. We're just here to make sure, hey, here's how home buying works. You know,
yeah.
it's not just this cut. It's not like you can buy a car or something where you can walk into a house dealership and exchange money. There's lucrative things that you need to.
Well, a lot of what, like I provide all the contracts and stuff like that, but a lot of what my job is to negotiate the best deal. Like if you're buying a house, it's my job to get concessions and get you the best deal that you can on that house. And on the flip side, if I'm the selling agent, I want to get them the most money for their house, you know? That's a lot of people don't understand that that's our job too. I mean, we're in, like, we don't hate the other agent, but I mean, we're in like, you know, negotiations. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah. And if you don't know what you're negotiating, then you're already losing the negotiation.
Exactly.
That's why you need these people. Like, because my dad's husband does real estate in Houston and stuff. And so he's.
Oh, cool.
And so he'll be like, you know, these people have, I've showed him their ninth house. He's like, I don't know what they, you know. It's frustrating because it's like you get some people that just don't know what they want and they just keep looking. And it's like, dude, if you want to buy a house, we need to speed this up.
It's shit or get off the pot. Yeah. One of the two.
It's
especially
like,
in this market.
I was like, well, it's just you. How many houses can you look at before you decide? I was like, if you're taking this long just to even decide on what house, it's going to be gone before you can even.
Oh yeah.
If you're taking this long just to even decide on what houses you like.
Yeah. And there's a lot of these people that are just window shoppers, dude.
Yeah.
And they want an agent to show them 9 houses every week for the next 2 years. And there's people actually like that. I did an open house the other day and I asked the guy, I was like, how long have you been looking? He's like, oh, we've been looking about 9 months. You know, I'm like, dude, I was like, dang. He's like, yeah, we haven't really found one that just spoke to us is what they said. I was like, dang, you know, it wasn't my client, but I was showing a house for somebody else.
But it sounds like you're not listening. If it's taking you 9 months, then you're not listening.
Exactly.
You're not listening to what you want to actually make a decision because nothing's spurring you. And that's why, you know, I've looked at houses and stuff, but I'm also like, let me just like look at it from a long perspective and not just like jump in just to have a property or something, right? Because there are things.
Yeah.
And it's just a challenging thing because I'm not home a lot. So it's one of those things where certain things on my criteria doesn't match what other people's criteria is. And you have to learn and be okay with it.
And you want it to be a home. You don't want to just go get you a house. Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I mean, have you had a house before?
I've never had a house before. Like I had really bad credit. Like I've been working on just living in a one bedroom apartment, getting my credit card debt down and everything else. And
I'll tell you now, being a comedian is not going to help your credit.
I have a day job too. So that
it
definitely does help. Like it's definitely had provided extra income for the last few years. That's helped me pay off my debt and get my credit back to where I want it to be.
Yeah.
And so now it's just amassing, you know, just kind of, you know, stowing away money for if I do decide when I do go to home buyers that I have a down payment and I have the show, I have proof of income, proof of down payment. Because people don't realize that. And then also, you, if you're going to buy a freestanding house and not a condo, you got to have money stashed away for unexpected repairs, because you probably want, you know, I think it's like, what, a fourth of the house or a fourth of your payment, fourth of your down payment
put away
to for like plumbing or something like that, that may.
Yeah. Foundation. I mean, all kinds of things can go wrong with a house.
Yeah.
Especially if you get an older house. But,
or even new, because like, because now you're buying a house on land that may not have settled yet. They just, you know, that's one of those fresh construction. It's nice to have new things, but
I've owned two houses in my, well, two houses that I've lived in. I have other houses like rental properties and stuff, but my first house was a new build. This one's a new build. And I mean, to me, there's a lot less that goes wrong with it. There's like nail pops and, you know, things shifting like that. But on older houses, I just see way worse things, you know.
Yeah, it's just the...
And they're under warranty when they're new, which is great. You know what I mean? So that's the best part about it.
Yeah, and you can you have to look at door frames and things like that to just see, hey.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mike, I appreciate you doing this. You've
no problem, dude.
Been an awesome conversation.
It didn't even feel like an interview. It felt like a conversation.
Yeah, and that's how I always, that's how I just try to do it. It's like, you know, your fear of risk, but I mean, you seem to have the confidence to be able to meet that fear head on and just completely, you know, just, and like I said, the key to taking risk is to love what you're doing in that risk instead of doing something you feel
have to do.
Yeah, you would that have to do, but you see the money side of it and you get you get tempted by the, how much it could possibly pay you versus if you actually enjoy doing it. Because if I mean, there are certain things where if it's $1 million, I may just swallow, but at the same time, but if it's just $50,000 a year doing what you love, you know, you love, or $100,000 a year doing something that will ultimately tear your soul apart.
Yeah, and kill you early.
Yeah, why take the extra $50,000 just for that? You know, it doesn't seem, and people, it's just so many times you'll find people that will do that and then regret it, and then they don't see a way out or a way to do other things. I'm just blessed enough to be able to do a job that I enjoy and comedy in the same, you know, time. And so I have maximum vacation days at my job, and my, you know, they're like, why don't you take time off? I'm like, well, I'm already doing what I love off the clock. So I've never felt like I needed a vacation, because I would just clock out and go do what I love.
The stage is your vacation.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm going to be honest, dude, you kill it up there, dude. Seriously.
Thank you.
I mean, you have all the aspects of like somebody that should have Netflix specials already. You know what I mean?
Well, we can hope. I love doing it, and it's one of those things where if that were to come, I would enjoy it. But I just love what I do, and it's just it comes across, and you know, I'm just at a really good place in my life there comedically that I can kind of pull that off, and it just actually, you know, it actually worked for me, and you know, it's just kind of a, you know, comp. Like I was saying about my CD, it's just a compendium of my achievement of just hard work.
Yeah.
So, Mike, where can people find you on social media if they wanted a house?
I'm all over social media. All social media at Mike Danielson Realtor, you can find me. I also have my movie stuff on there, is at Payday Plays. My music's all over iTunes and, you know, Spotify. I don't know if anybody wants to listen to that anymore, but hey. I mean, it's there. You know, it's a culmination of my art. But I mean, yeah, real estate, you can find me there. My number is 972-880-4105. You can call me anytime, 24 hours a day. I'm like 7-Eleven. I'm always open.
All right. Well, thank you again, Mike, for doing this.
Thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it, brother.
So that was Mike. Wow. What a great, just a risk taker. Like for someone that's afraid of risking at all, he's facing it head on, and that's just amazing to see. He's putting on so many different hats, from Payday, his rapping, his real estate agent, Mike Danielson, acting, And then even real estate, where he's just, making waves in the McKinney real estate area here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which is like north. So check out Mike Danielson on social media. All his links will be in the show notes. Check out his music on Spotify. Check out his acting on Amazon Prime. And check out Alexander K. wherever you see comedy being performed. Just check for Alexander K. with K-A-A as his name. So check him out. What an amazing week. I got the call on Friday that I would be working in the Grove out in Lowell, Arkansas for the first time in like 3 years. And so I made my way out there and got a couple scratches on the car on the way and had a great weekend with Sherman Golden, who was an amazing comedian. We had fun. We had great laughs. And we just went back to our little cabin in the woods where we stay whenever you perform at the Grove. You stay in a little condo cabin out by the lake, and we just basically eyeballed spiders most of the night instead of sleeping. So thanks again to Bill Adams for putting us up and the hospitality and all the free food that we got all week. It was a fun time. Hopefully I'll get to work with Sherman again in the near future. He's going to recommend me for some gigs, which is really awesome. We had a great time. I drove home today, got home about 1:30 in the afternoon, went some grocery shopping, just started to get peace back together from being away for 2.5 days. But yeah, it was a fun time. Again, check out Mike Danielson. Myself, next week, I'll be working with Mike Palaszczuk at the Dallas Comedy Club. I'll be hosting. Come check out one of those shows. It'll be an amazing time. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there, including my dad, who is probably sitting at home either relaxing or planning his next trip. He loves to travel, and he does international travel. He just spent a month in Spain in May, so he may be off and out again. Well, thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast, and happy Father's Day, and have a great week. And now some thank yous for the folks that make this show possible. Thanks to Barry Whitewater for my art and graphics. You can follow him on Instagram at bwhite H2O. Get it? H2O, like water. You can also follow him on Facebook Music. A huge thank you to Gunnar Olson for the wonderful music provided for this podcast. You can follow him on Instagram at gunbuns, that's G-U-N-B-U-N-S, as well as his website, gunnarolson.net. Check out some of the samples that he has recorded. They're amazing. He's an amazing percussionist. If you want to follow the show, we've got a Facebook group, Sum of All Fears. Instagram, Twitter, you can find us at Some Fear Fans. If you have some feedback for the show, email me at somefearfans, SOMEFEARFANS, at gmail.com. I'll be happy to take those into consideration. Also, if you'd like to be a guest, email me at somefearfans@gmail.com. We can try to iron out some details and get that settled in. Give us some feedback on Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave a review. It makes the show bigger, and it's not going anywhere. I'm going to record as many shows as I possibly can. If you want to follow me on social media, I am at Ryan Perrio. It's RyanPerrio on all social media platforms. You can follow me there, and you can check me out at RyanPerrio.com, my website. I'll try to list upcoming shows there as well. It's been kind of spotty because as soon as I set it up, that's when the pandemic happened. And everything's kind of just in a holding pattern. Thanks again for listening to the Sum of All Fears podcast. Next week, we'll have another guest with another fear. Thanks for listening.